friends. This is Michael Eliu Colby, author of The Algonquin Kid and many, many musicals. And I'm about to meet Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio. Hooray!
Oh, shalom, shalom, my friends.
Shalom. Shalom aleichem.
Shalom aleichem to you, too. Oh, my goodness. That voice you are hearing,
Season.
Ladies. Will you let me get the intro going here, sir?
Okay, go for it.
All right, thank you. By the way, what is your Hebrew name?
Michael.
Michael.
Eliyahu.
Ooh.
Well, my father changed it from Cohen, but it's Colby now.
So it's
like the cheese.
So it's Colby like the cheese, and it's Eliyahu like the Navi. All right, we got it. Here we go. We got Michael Michael Eliyahu Colby on the radio with us here in the neighborhood on the Dave's Gone By radio program. Now, who is Michael Eliyahu Colby? I will tell you. He is the co-author of the off-Broadway musical Charlotte Sweet. He is also, he got a Drama Desk Award nomination for doing that, by the way. He's written tons of special material and songs for the likes of Tony Randall, Jack Guilford, Bruce Adler, Tova Felcher, Donna McKechnie, Robert Guccione, Linda Lavin, and Sheldon Harnick.
I'm kvelling.
Oh, and nearly every one of those, by the way, has been a guest on the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air. So we're very, very proud of that. And he should be proud because he's a writer. He's written a book, an autobiography, The Algonquin Kid.
Yes. Believe it or not, the Algonquin Hotel, the venerable hotel, the landmark historic hotel, was owned by, from 1946 through 1987, Southern Jews named Ben and Mary Bodney, and they were my grandparents. And I pretty much grew up there, and I was a real-life counterpart.
Get back to the telephone.
Oh, it's these New Jersey phones. You can't trust them.
Ugh, God, New Jersey.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, I do. Yes, I can hear you now. That's much better. So, wait, your grandparents owned the Algonquin Hotel for 40 years. Tell the story of how they even came upon buying the Algonquin. It was getting kind of run down, and what happened?
Yes. Well, my grandfather had a choice. He wanted to buy the Pittsburgh Pirates, but Bing Crosby got there first, and my grandmother couldn't have been happier because the legend is they spent their honeymoon at the Algonquin. She always wanted to live there. And they moved in, and they made their own history. The years from 1948 on have never been chronicled in a book before, and so much interesting stuff went on there. And I felt it was my family duty to.
he said duty. Let me ask you, Michael Colby, though. What did your grandfather do that he had the money to even consider buying the Pirates or a big hotel in New York?
He made a fortune in oil, and he just decided that he wanted to invest it in something a little more glamorous, and you couldn't do better than the Algonquin Hotel. They moved there, and the place was falling apart. And like elves in the night, they restored it so the tenants didn't even know there were changes because they kept all the traditions while trying to modernize it. I mean, they were the first hotel to use electronic keys. They had air conditioning when it was really needed. And they broke a lot of barriers. I mean, this is what I'm really proud of with my family. During McCarthyism, the Algonquin was a haven for people who were blacklisted, like Jack Guilford. John Henry Falk, who was a television personality, lived there as my grandfather's guest, and he sued CBS for firing him and got an incredible settlement. And many years later, his story, Fear on Trial, was filmed by, as a TV movie, CBS.
Well, and actually, I don't know if he stayed there as well, but in a week or two, the movie Trumbo will be opening.
Oh, was a regular visitor there, too.
Dalton Trumbo was a visitor. But let me ask you, did your grandparents face any problems for, quote-unquote, harboring so-called communists?
First of all, the theater community was different than any other community.
Yeah.
That was a place people could go. And also, when it was not fashionable, my grandparents opened their doors. I was hearing stories the other day about African Americans who were not allowed to perform in New York cabarets. My grandparents, the Algonquin was the place to go. It was where people like Ella Fitzgerald and Ray Wilkins of the NAACP, Oscar Peterson stayed there and was so grateful he played at my bar mitzvah.
Now, let me say also that I believe you had your bar mitzvah in Cedarhurst, New York. You know, this radio program emerged from Long Island, from the Five Towns and Great Neck. So yay! He came all the way to Cedarhurst and played at your bar mitzvah?
Right. He certainly did. And it was actually at Middle Bay Country Club. He was one of a lot of people who were there that... Ernest Hollings, who was a senator and governor in South Carolina, was also one of my grandparents' great friends. And I ended up on the night of my bar mitzvah at the campaign bus of Robert Kennedy.
Oh, my God.
He wished me a mazel tov, and he said he wished he could have made it. And I knew he was just really putting me on. But it was nice to hear that anyway.
Yeah.
He had other things to do at that time.
Well, and boy, wasn't that a hole in the head when he said that? No, I kid. But you know, we're talking with Michael Colby, who had his bar mitzvah with Oscar Peterson playing. You mentioned Ella Fitzgerald.
Ella Fitzgerald,
and
yes.
It's Gerald for Ella. But here's the deal. You knew her.
I knew her. Not only did I know her, she used to serenade my grandmother whenever my grandmother was in the audience. She would do things like sing Bewitched, Bothered Mrs. Bodney, Am I? And I remember sitting down for breakfast with her, and she was a big musical theater fan, and she started singing to me the song she'd heard from a new show that was coming up, and she said, "The name on everybody's lips is gonna be Roxy," and she had no idea it was gonna be an Oscar-winning film one day.
Well, that's going to come, not to mention a big musical in 1970. So wait, what was the time frame on that? Because Chicago opened in 70.
That was in the 70s.
Yeah.
But she was, I knew her from when I was a kid. She stayed there whenever she was in New York. She used to come in with Chinese food and ice cream in the middle of the night and treat all the bellhops to it. And she was real folk. I mean, she would run up to the elevator whenever All My Children was playing. She wouldn't miss her soap.
Huh.
She was just an incredible lady. She was just a sweetheart.
Now, did you actually live at the Algonquin, or did you just stay there weekends?
No, I visited from actually Hewlett, Long Island.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute.
What? Yes.
Hewlett, Long Island?
The Five Towns. That's where my family had a house, and my father would drive in every day and work as a manager at the Algonquin. Yeah. And then I'd spend my weekends at the Algonquin, but I actually moved in when I was 18 and stayed there till I was married.
It's rather amusing because the producer and the host of this radio program, Dave, lived in Hewlett, Long Island for 30 years. So it's just funny that you would mention that particular spot.
Well, it's a small world. What can I say?
Well, they do call it Hewlett.
A neighbor of mine around the corner was Stan Lee, who created all the Marvel comics. And I started my journalistic career writing letters to Superman Comics. And I wrote a letter that I didn't like Marvel comics. And his daughter, who lived around the corner and also at one point attended the same school as me, Windmere Academy.
Oh, Windmere Academy? Oh, my God, this is a small world.
Yes. Anyway, she wrote me an angry letter, and I wish I'd saved it because it would have been worth a fortune these days.
Wow.
But, you know, I just want to have a chance to mention that on December 13th, Sunday at 2 o'clock, I am doing a cabaret show about the Algonquin Hotel. It's going to be like an evocation of the Oak Room. And I have incredible people in it. I have cabaret stars Natalie Douglas and Broadway stars Robert Creighton and Leah Hawking and Martin Vinovic. And we're going to be doing songs associated with the Algonquin, people like Ella Fitzgerald, Lerner and Lowe, who wrote Camelot and My Fair Lady there, George Gershwin, who used to hang out at my great-grandfather's kosher deli in Charleston, South Carolina, when he was researching for Porgy and Bess.
Now, wait a minute. Did you have any...
My grandparents moved to New York, they had these associations.
Wow.
My parents were in Charleston first.
Well, did he share any memories of George Gershwin writing or working on Porgy and Bess? Any stories about George Gershwin when he was in the Carolinas and eating at the deli?
Yes. He became so close to my family that he would play his new songs from Porgy and Bess. Before anyone heard them, and he dated my Aunt Sid, who was like a second mother to me, and she always felt guilty. She thought that they could have gotten married, but when he took her out, he bought her a chocolate ice cream cone. She wanted vanilla, and we lost out on that connection because of a flavor.
Well, he didn't live very long anyway, so it probably worked out.
Oh, like if she had married him, maybe it would have made a difference.
Oh, you know? You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have fed him well. They were all good cooks.
Oh, I imagine so. What do you take for your grandparents to run a hotel? I mean, it's one thing to plunk down money and buy a building. It's quite another, and it's even one thing to hire some workmen to fix it up. But you gotta run the place. What was that like for them?
Well, the secret was that it was hospitality. It's a small hotel, under 200 rooms, and they became personal friends with practically everyone who went there. And it was treated like a country inn. They were Southerners, and they treated everyone with that gentility. That Jewish gentility.
Well, is there such a thing?
I know. I mean, there is a theory that the Beverly Hillbillies were in part based on my grandparents, because my grandfather never made it through school. And here you have these people from Charleston, suddenly the owners of this great cultural center where all the literati gathered. And he was an oil man from Tennessee. Actually, he was brought up in Chattanooga. And the family names on the Beverly Hillbillies were the Clampets and the Bodines, and my grandparents were the Bodneys, the difference between one letter. And Paul Henning, who created the Beverly Hillbillies, used to stay there. And Paul Henning said it was based on other things, but one of the giveaways was that there was an episode in which Silvers, as a con man, tried to sell Jed Clampett the Brooklyn Bridge and the Algonquin Hotel.
Wow. But also, let me ask
you... Who knew Jed Clampett was Jewish?
Who knew it? Who knew? Who knew? Well, the old cranky woman, I would figure. Maybe. You know, that would make sense, personality-wise. But
well, they call my grandmother Granny.
Oh, yeah. So did it break your heart, though, when they sold it? And now it's part of the Marriott?
Yeah, I mean, it was a part of our family. There were many reasons that are discussed in the book. I mean, there was a certain tragic underlayer to the family history that you can read about in the book. Which,
well, give us a hint.
On Amazon, yes, hello?
Yeah, no, I'm saying give us a hint, all right?
Excuse me?
Give us a hint. We'll go out and read the book, but tell you.
Well, the tax laws changed then. Oh. It just was the right time to sell. And there had been a divisive family
really?
Experience. It was very hard on my father, who died very young, and who was the manager of the Algonquin. Anyway...
Wait, was he not suited for it? Was it too much work? Was it... Why do you think it contributed to his not living very long?
Let's just say he developed alcoholic tendencies.
All right.
And the hotel and
and did you have a desire to take over?
No, you see, here was this Brooklyn boy. My father was Sidney Cohen, and he wanted to go, and he wanted to be a radio announcer, which is why he changed his name. And here he was surrounded by these people he idolized, like Noel Coward and Ella Fitzgerald and Norman Granz, who was the head of Verve Records. But it was not easy my grandfather could be difficult to work with. And so he was caught in the middle between my mother and my and the family situation, and it was also, it affected us at home too. But the bright side is it made me very creative, and I've never had to, I've never been on drugs or alcohol or smoking, but I've got enough neuroses in me to all kinds of crazy characters. I mean, my show Charlotte Sweet was about a high soprano addicted to helium balloons. And my other show, which the album is coming out, Tales of Tinseltown, was about a girl who rises to the top in Hollywood imitating animals.
Oh, so, okay.
I got a lot of experience witnessing at the Algonquin.
Well, let me ask you, Michael Colby, then. Moving away a little bit from the hotel for a moment and talking about your career. You have this show, this off-Broadway show that is kind of a hit, and it gets Drama Desk nominated for a couple of things.
Right.
But at the same time, we haven't really heard of Charlotte Sweet in the past 30 years or so. Is that... Does that kill you as an artist when you get to a certain point with a project and you think, maybe Broadway, maybe National Tour, maybe, you know, it's done here and there and everywhere, and then, you know, it sort of hits a wall after a point?
Well, you know, seeing people at the Algonquin on the rise and then in the dumps, it inures you to expect anything. And what I got out of all my shows, I had these mishpokas, these families. And when I had my my engagement party, I had the family from Charlotte Sweet, the family from Tales of Tinseltown, the family from Ludlow Lad, all these shows. I mean, this is my son. He sees his mother, who's a lawyer and who has stable work, and he sees my friends who have won Tony Awards and who have been starring in Broadway shows and who don't work for a few years, and that's just the way of the theater. But you know, it's a blessing and it's a curse, but we love it. And I mean, Charlotte Sweet had its disciples. One thing that happened is that we opened, and I had the same press agent as another show that got a little bit more attention at the same time. We thought we were going to be the hit of the year, and then another show called Little Shop of Horrors opened, and we got reviewed together. And but they were picked up by the Schubert family and Cameron McIntosh. And so we got overshadowed. In fact, we had the same PR person who was promoting us together and got fired from both shows on the same day.
Oh, my God.
He was great, and he didn't deserve it.
Oh, I bet you off the air, you could probably tell me who it is, and I might know who that is.
No. You know, after that, he went out of the business.
Oh, well, I don't blame him. That's a bad day. And so Michael Colby, though, well, here's the thing. Being the scion of the Algonquin owners, did that mean or does that mean that you can pursue theater and you don't really have to worry about finances?
No, it doesn't give me that financial security. I that's why I have my daily job as a teacher. But it gives me a little bit of a cushion. I mean, my grandparents were instrumental what happened is there are all these places in the Algonquin, like the Rose Room used to be, look like a scene from My Fair Lady or Hello Dolly. It was even designed by Oliver Smith, who won the Tony for some of those shows. The Blue Bar was in a different place. And then there was this side place called the Annex, which at one point during Prohibition may have been a speakeasy. And God knows that the hotel is full of ghosts, Dorothy Parker, and who, you just name them, it feels like the spirits are around. And my grandparents took that that space, which had been a storage space for years, and they turned it into a rehearsal space for me. And I got every actor in New York to work for me for nothing because they got free Algonquin meals. And sometimes actors would show up who weren't even in my shows and come for lunchtime. And it was just a great time.
Do you have any, in the deal-making, in the selling of the place, do you have any privileges at all there?
They love me now. They love me. I mean, I'm closer now to the Algonquin than I've been for years because I have supplied this history, and I've done it in a loving way. And I go around and promulgate the legend of the Algonquin through the present.
Oh, so, but can you stay there for free, or you...
Well, when I've done radio interviews, they have given me a space.
That's good.
And when I had my New York Times interview, it was right at the Algonquin.
And if you order a martini, they give you a free olive, I think.
Yeah, I just have to learn how to drink.
That's true. Hey, you mentioned My Fair Lady, by the way.
Oh, My Fair Lady, yes.
Wasn't that sort of semi-written?
Yes, Lerner and Lowe, they say, not only did they always say the Algonquin, Lerner's relative helped to broker the deal, but they had a suite, and it was right below my grandparents' home. My grandparents converted half of the 10th floor of the Algonquin into a suite.
Ah.
And the Lerner and Lowe below, and in the middle of the night, they were playing their latest song, and it woke my grandfather up, and he complained about all the noise, and he said he wouldn't mind if it were something good. And what they were doing, they were creating I Could Have Danced All Night. And then years later, they promised me I was going to play the page in their new show, Camelot. And I didn't get to play the page, but I went to camp, and I impressed the drama counselor, and I got all the leads at camp, and my family just didn't want me to go into show business. But I was my grandmother's date at the opening night of Camelot.
Well, okay, but you weren't, as a young person, were you disappointed that you weren't up on stage, or was it enough to be there and watch?
It was enough to see the enchantment of seeing the theater, of which I witnessed a golden age of great musicals, was a prize that was beyond anything of becoming an actor whose fame may, you know, is fleeting. But I got to witness so much history from afar, like a Zelig or a Forrest Gump. I saw history in the making, whether I was part of it or not.
Now, was there a point in your, let's say, your 20s when you wanted to be still on stage and do acting, or was it always, I think I'll write?
Are you kidding?
What?
This week, not only am I having the show on the 13th at Urban Arts, Urban Stage, but my wife and I, with me singing and my wife, who's a wonderful pianist playing, are going to be doing an Algonquin Kid presentation for the Neve Shalom Hadassah.
Yay! Where is that?
That's in Metuchen, New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey again, okay.
And I have starred in their shows, too.
Oh, McMazel McGlick.
Yeah.
Oh, forget the Algonquin people, that you are at the Metuchen, the Mene Brith. Holy
One of the ironies is I was the lead in Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, and the person who played the lead off-Broadway played a role based on me in the original production of Tales of Tinseltown. So there are I feel like I'm a doppelganger.
Well, wait, are you talking about Jason Grob? Because he was...
Yes, I'm talking about Jason Grob.
He's another friend of the neighborhood. We love Jason. Say hello to him. Yay!
Yes, he played he played Elmo Green, which is partly based on me in Tales of Tinseltown, and created the role I played, Barry, in Hello Mudda, Hello Fada.
It really is a very, very tiny, tiny world. You know?
Uh-huh.
And then, by the way,
I give you a few hints, and you name who the actor I'm mentioning.
It's amazing, isn't it? And by the way, you did mention also Martin Vidnovic. He is another friend of the neighborhood, so say shalom to him when you appear with him. When it's on Sunday, not this Sunday, but next Sunday, 2 o'clock at Urban Stages, which is on West 30th Street, part of their Winter Rhythms.
He's singing a song from a Lerner and Lowe show that he got a Tony nomination from, Brigadoon.
Oh, my goodness.
Among other things.
So, for tickets, by the way, let's tell people how they can get tickets.
Oh, yes. Let me tell you. You can call Urban Stages at 1-866-811-4111 and ask for the Algonquin Kid. And I'll be there to get, well, I'm selling books and signing and saying hello and telling you anything I'm not allowed to say in the book.
Oh, my goodness. Like what?
Yes, yeah. Who had those sleepover dates at the Algonquin?
Oh, come on. Give us one. Please, give us one.
I don't know. Well, let's just say that Laurence Olivier and a future wife had a lot of experience at the Algonquin.
Okay. Well, I thought you were going to say Laurence Olivier and a future male friend had experiences there, but okay.
I really don't know. One of the stories I do mention is how Vivian Leigh, after she and Laurence Olivier split, when he was sick, my grandmother used to make him chicken soup.
Oh.
But she came to the Algonquin and specifically asked to see the rooms he stayed in, because she wanted to be close to him.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Little bit stalkery.
But he was gone with the wind by then.
And by the way, if you want to stalk Michael Colby, you got to go to Urban Stages at, that's next Sunday at 2, 866-811-4111. Again, it's that phone number,
866. 866- Hello.
Let's start. Yes, hey, shalom.
And yeah. You'll see my picture on the book at Amazon.com. And the picture of me is, I guess I was a 6-year-old, really cute 6-year-old, looking like a little rascal. And I haven't changed a day.
And by the way, let me ask you something.
I haven't changed any clothes. No, yeah. I did that.
You teach. That is your day job. As you say, you teach in New Jersey. What do you teach?
I'm a substitute teacher, and I cover everything. I believe it or not, I taught Japanese one day, and I don't know what.
How?
They give you, you know, they give you handouts, and you tell the kids do your thing, and you collect it. But when it's English or drama, I actually teach them. And what's nice is when I was at my prime during Charlotte Sweet, people used to go around saying, "There's the playwright, Michael Colby." And now, in Metuchen and the local towns, wherever I go, all the kids say, "There goes Mr. Colby."
Oh, all right. Well, that's kind of... Now, you haven't been stabbed yet or anything like that?
No, nothing like that.
Okay, just wondering. You know, you hear about kids
it's
today.
It's enough pain being in the theater.
All right. No, but you know, are the kids today better, worse, or can you get them off their iPads and their iPhones and their...
Some of the schools where I work have higher standards about that, but it's mind-blowing. It's mind-blowing. And then, of course, they have to stop me from going on my iPhone, too.
Oh, well, that's... So what are you working on, by the way? You've written the book. The book is out there. People are going to buy it.
Well, there's the album of Tales of Tinseltown, the reissue of Charlotte Sweet, and I have a show called Dangerous that was just optioned.
Ah.
And I have 7 other shows that you can find through my website, www.michaelcolby.com, which are equally worth doing.
So, michaelcolby.com, C-O-L-B-Y, michaelcolby.com. Do you always work with different collaborators? Do you ever renew?
You know, I've been very faithful to my wife, but among my collaborators, I'm just, a pushover. I can't get enough. I just write so fast that they can't keep up with me, so I have many.
So is there a librettist or a lyricist that you most admire or has most influenced your work?
Oh, yeah. I was the researcher, and I'm a protege. I was a researcher for the biography and then a protege of the Lorenz Hart family.
Oh.
So I'm heavily influenced by Rodgers and Hart, and also E.Y. Yip Harburg. Well, Rodgers and Hart, if you don't know who he is, he wrote all the songs that Frank Sinatra used to sing, from Pal Joey and Boys from Syracuse and Blue Moon. And the other one I love is E.Y. Yip Harburg, who wrote the lyrics to The Wizard of Oz. And I talk about them all in my book. And I'm proud to say that my name is on the Yip Harburg website because of my book, along with Yip's books, too. I feel very honored about that.
And you've also been honored to work with or write specialty material for all those people that I mentioned when we first began. So do you have any great stories about working with some of these people that you had to do, little cute...
Well, if anyone, I loved working with Bruce Adler, the late Bruce Adler. And when I did that, it was like I was living the Dick Van Dyke show. Because I would come in from suburbia, write comedy for him, and we'd work together, and it was just like being part of a sitcom. And it was just so much fun. I was very
Mary Chase.
Say about the Pooka?
Yeah.
Mary Chase stayed at the Algonquin, and when I was a kid, she used to give me white chocolate bunnies.
Oh.
Looked like Harvey. And years later, she paid me the ultimate present. She asked me to collaborate on a musical version of her show, Mrs. McThing. The idea that these people I grew up with, who were my idols, another person was Dale Wasserman, who wrote the play version of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest,
right.
Who wrote Man of La Mancha, and he asked me to write a show with him. It was just such a kick. It was like an extension of what I'd witnessed, and suddenly it was happening to me.
Is there a book that you've read, or maybe, hell, these days it's a movie, that you think, God, somebody needs to musicalize that, maybe me? Is there something you've always said?
I've already done those things, and then you lose the rights. That's why I usually create original shows.
Ah. Well, hey, you said you just had a show of yours optioned. What is that one about?
1930s thriller in the Hitchcock style with a swing band score. We're waiting to see what happens with that. And I wrote a show about Yiddish theater that won acclaim in New Jersey. And on the other hand, I've written a Christmas musical. I was commissioned to write a Christmas musical. Another show I wrote about adoption that has been done National Adoption Month and won a lot of acclaim called They Chose Me. So I've got a lot of them out there. I mean, they're not household names, but they gave a lot of people a lot of pleasure.
Oh, sure. No, of course. But I'm curious about the process. Like, you have a musical, you write with somebody, and then how do you get it to the people who option it?
Oh, well, you know, Richard Rodgers, Sammy Kahn said, what comes first, the words or the music? And he said the phone call, and Richard Rodgers said the check. The easy part is the writing. The hard part is getting it out there, because there are so many gifted people out there. And these days I usually get called in to work on a project. And
nice.
If I know what's going on, then I'll do it.
Wow. Oh, that's terrific. And is there more to tell? Will there be a sequel to your book, The Algonquin Kid, or have you really told it all?
I pretty much covered everything up to my family's last days. But maybe one of these days there'll be some interest in the Algonquin Kid himself. But for now, the book covers a lot beyond the Algonquin. It's the family history. It's the history of the Algonquin. And I was part of some major off-Broadway organizations. The first organization to develop new musicals. And the first organization to do musicals in concert, like the Encore series.
Oh, my God. You were involved with Encores?
It was called the New Amsterdam Theater Company, and it was the source for every other musical in concert that followed.
Wow. I did not realize that. Wow. Big wow there. Can I ask you last question for the delightful and the Jewish Michael Colby? And the author of the Algonquin.
And the Southern, too. When I lived in the Five Towns, they worked hard to get rid of my left-handedness and my Southern accent.
I would hope so.
So I could talk, you know, properly like a Long Islander.
There you go. They're like me. Like me. Yeah. You're talking now. What the hell? Now I don't remember what my goddamn question was. It was, one more memory. One more delightful memory as a child or even an older person of your years living in and visiting the Algonquin Hotel.
Okay. I'll tell you a story that involved my grandmother.
Okay.
And because she knew Arthur Miller, who stayed at the hotel while he was running the Crucible, and she knew Joe DiMaggio, who was a good friend of my grandfather's, they also knew Marilyn.
Okay. Marilyn who? Just
Monroe.
Kidding. Yes, I know.
And,
I'm kidding.
One day, Granny was going down the block from the Algonquin, and Marilyn comes in this beautiful, white, full-length mink. And Grandma says, Marilyn, that's the most beautiful fur I've ever seen. And Marilyn said, you think that's something? You should see what's under it. And she flashed my grandmother.
Wow. I assume you wish...
That was one adventure I would have liked to share with my grandmother.
Indeed. Wow, okay.
Oh, and when we went to the Beverly Hills Hotel, if you want a Jewish story, I was a mischievous kid, and I would drive the hotel operators crazy. And at the poolside, they paged the four questions. They paged Manish Tana, Laila Hazer, Michael Halelot, and it went on from there.
Huh. I'm very glad to hear that. In fact, you, or even Ryan, I know you wrote that Christmas musical, which I have some problems with, but oh boy, you even wrote a Hanukkah-related song that we're going to play to end the segment here. What made you do that?
Because I was asked to write Christmas shows every year for this this regular series, and I said, well, maybe I'll write something a little different this year, if it's the song I think it is.
Yeah, well, I assume it's the song you think it is. I can't begin to tell you. Well, hold on, let me see if I can find it here in the iTunes-y...
By the way, the last lyric, which isn't on the... on the recording is, I'm dreaming of a wood dreidel. Okay.
That's it. We are all dreaming of wooden dreidels here just before Hanukkah, and a week before you can go see Michael Colby himself and all these wonderful singers who are going to be doing his show, his presentation with music, let's call it, the Algonquin Kid. It's at Urban Stages on West 30th Street. You can get tickets at 866-811-4111. You can find out all this information and more at michaelcolby.com. Mikhail, it's been a delight to talk with you. I wish you more music, more words, more writing, and more success, and more Judaism.
Give me some checks. Thank you.
And more checks, absolutely.
Okay.
And many more substitute teaching assignments.
Oh, yes. That's my bread and butter.
And you know what? With all things considered, next year in Trenton.
I'll follow my son. That's where he works sometimes.
There you go. Shalom to you.
Shalom.